Hare Krishna Prabhu. Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Radha Madhava Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari Janavalabha Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Brajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Brajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari Gopi Janavalabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Brajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Brajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Kishor Kishori, Jaya Kishor Kishori, Jaya Kishor Kishori, Jaya Kishor Kishori. Jaya Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jaya Jagannath, Jaya Jaya Baladev, Jaya Jaya Subhadra. Nittai Gaura Haribo, 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 Nittai Gaura Haribo. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada.
Jaya Om Vishnu Padaya Paramhamsa Pariveka Charya Asatarasada His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jaya Om Vishnu Padaya Paramhamsa Pariveka Charya Asatarasada His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Goswami Prabhupada Ki. Ananda Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki. Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to the assembly of devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Uttaya Srimati Chandamaya Swami Bhakti Vinanda Swami Amaste Sarasvati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Vishesha Shunavadi Pashadishatayine Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyazivacha Patidanam Pavanebhi Vaishnavevi Namanama. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Today's reading from Canto 10, Chapter 23, entitled The Brahmanas Wives Blessed, verse 30. So we read the Sanskrit shloka. Grihnanti no na patayak pitrau sutava na brat bantu sugurda kuta eva chanye. Tasmat babat prapadayak patitat manam no. Nanya bhavet gatir Arindama Tadvidheti. Grihnanti Nona Patayah Pitarao Sutava. Na bratan bandu suhrda kuta eva chanye. Tasmat babat prapadayah patitat manamno. Nanya bhaved gatir arindama tad vidheti. Gehnanti nona patayah pitrau sutava. Na bratran bantu surda kuta eva chanye. Tasmad bhavat prapadayah patitat manamno. Nanya bhaved gatir arindama tad videhi. Ashmad Babat Prapadayak Patiat Manam No. Anya Bhaved Gati Arindama Tad Vidhehi. Thank you for chanting. Probably want to chant? Sure? Okay. So we will go to a word by word translation. Grihnanti. They will accept. Naha. Us. Na. Not. Patayaha. Our husbands. Pitarau. Fathers. Sutaha. Sons. Va. Or. Na. Not. Bratr. Brothers. Bandhu. Other relatives. Suhurdaha. And friends. Kutaha. How then? Eva. Indeed. Cha. And. Anye. Other people. Tasmat. Therefore. Bhavat. Your. Prapadayoho. At the tips of the lotus feet. Patita, fallen, Atmanam, whose bodies, Naha, for us, Na, not, Anya, any other, Bhavet, there can be, Gatihi, destination, Arim Dhamma, O chastiser of enemies. Tat. That. Vidhehi. Kindly bestow upon us. Translation of the verse. Our husbands, fathers, sons, brothers, and other relatives and friends will no longer take us back. And how could anyone else be willing to give us shelter? Therefore, since we have thrown ourselves at your lotus feet and have no other destination, please, O chastiser of enemies, grant our desire. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows. From their very youth, the Brahmana's wives had heard about Lord Krishna's beauty, qualities and sweetness from the women folk of Vrindavan village, and also from the flower ladies, the betel nut sellers and others. Consequently, they always felt ecstatic love for Krishna and were indifferent to their household duties. Their husbands, seeing them as deviant, doubted them and avoided dealing with them as far as possible. Now the wives of the brahmanas were ready to formally reject their so-called families and neighbors, and out of great agitation, they were crying and placing their heads upon Lord Krishna's lotus feet, offering obeisances. In this way, with choking voices, they spoke the above verse. They begged that Lord Krishna bestow upon them the benediction that he be their only destination, that he, the chastiser of enemies, subdue all their enemies, those difficulties obstructing them from attaining the Lord. The wives of the Brahmana simply wanted to serve Lord Krishna, and this is pure Krishna consciousness and ecstatic love of Godhead. Om Agyana Timrandasya Agyananjaya Shaka Chakshu Temi Shri Chaitanya Manabhishtam Slapitam Yena Buddha Svayam Arpam Dadati Svapadandika. Thank you very much for coming to class today. And this particular portion of the chapter, we are learning how the most fortunate wives of the Brahmanas were asking the Lord to stay with him in the forest. And Krishna was saying that they're better off coming back to the sacrificial arena to help their husbands complete the sacrifice, and in general go back to their families, helping their husbands fulfilling their duties. One thing that we can understand from the wives of the Brahmanas is that they were fully surrendered souls to Krishna, and they have already developed a pure love for him. And they were very adamant to stay with Krishna and get rid of the obstacles that were blocking their association with Krishna, such as their families and members who consider them as deviant. So we see in today's society, for those who try to maybe practice some path of spirituality, and that includes other paths of spirituality, not only our Krishna consciousness, but we see that it may be quite different. The behavior of people who consider themselves spiritual may be quite different from the example of the wives of the Brahmanas, in that they use those obstacles, such as family, jobs, careers, and other projects that are externally material, to delay or not perform spiritual service. I give myself as an example. Sometimes devotees may ask me, you know, Prabhuji, could you do this service at this time, you know, and such service? And I often reply, I would love to do the service, Prabhuji. However, I have to take my kids to the swimming class. Another occasion I may say, oh, I'd like to do this project, but really I have to be at work 10 hours a day for the next 2 weeks, so unfortunately I won't be able to do this project. So in this way, because of my attachment or sense of duty elsewhere, I'm using those items, those services, as more important as, you know, blocking myself from engaging in pure service to Lord Krishna. Now, that doesn't say, it doesn't mean that, you know, those duties are have to be material, and we'll get to that, but generally speaking, the feeling in the heart is that, you know, I am attached to my family, I am attached to my job, attached to my career, therefore, I'm busy, you know, I have a schedule set, so it is going to be very hard for me to devote more time at the temple. Therefore, I make a decision to postpone it or not to do that service. I'm sorry, but I'm not prepared to put everything aside and do this service. So this example from my own life. But the improper thing is that people who engage themselves in spiritual life, follow any authorized spiritual path, is that they do not even try to overcome those obstacles. They understand that that's the way it is, and I will allocate 1 hour per week to God, and then for the rest of the time, it's my time, my game, my work, and then once a week, I will come to the temple or church or, you know, synagogue, and I will do what's necessary, and then I'm good for 1 week. So they do not try, and I'm generalizing over here, they do not try to make more time for God. So the wives of the brahmanas were quite different, as you can read from the chapter. They left everything in their hearts, surrendered completely to Krishna. So the question arises, why did Krishna not want to take them, the wives of the brahmanas, with him? Or why did he allow them to leave? Why didn't he allow them to leave their worldly obligations and duties? After all, they were surrendered souls, fully surrendered, and their love of God was ecstatic, as the verse say. And it was quite appropriate for the pure devotees, such as the wives of the brahmas, to not consider the duties important, and they could be neglected, as we read from some verses later in the lecture. I quote some verses for you. So the wives of the brahmanas reached their spiritual goal, the topmost goal, which is love of God in their particular mood. To support the statements of the wives of the brahmanas, there are nice verses in Bhagavad Gita which I would like to read to you. One is, for example, in chapter 2, verse 45. Is it? Yes. It says, Traigunya Vishaya Veda, Nistraigunya Bhavarjuna, Nirdandvo Nitya Satvasto, Niryoga Kshema Atmavaha. So Lord Krishna is telling Arjuna that the Vedas deal mainly with the subject of the three modes of material nature. And Krishna is asking Arjuna to go beyond the modes. Be free from all dualities and from all anxieties for gain and safety, and be established in the self. And then it says, all purposes, the next verse, I'll just read the English, all purposes served by a small well can at once be served by a great reservoir of water. Similarly, all the purposes of the Vedas can be served to one who knows the purpose behind them. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, a very nice purport, he quotes a nice verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, verse 33, chapter 33, verse 7. Ahobata svapachoto garyan yajjihagre varyate namatubhyam tepustapaste juhuvuh sasnur arya brahmanuchur namagrananti yate.
O my Lord, a person who is chanting your holy name, although born of a low family like that of a chandala, dog-eater, is situated on the highest platform of self-realization. Such a person must have performed all kinds of penances and sacrifices according to Vedic rituals and studied the Vedic literatures many, many times after taking his bed in all the holy places of pilgrimage. Such a person is considered to be the best of the Aryan family. So the wives of the Brahmas are certainly right there at that level, you know, ecstatic love for Krishna. That means, you know, they were chanting his name, thinking about Krishna, fully surrender, ecstatic. They just wanted to serve the Lord. So those worldly duties were not so important. Another verse that supports the position of the Brahmana, the wives of the Brahmas, is verse 18 from chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita. A very nice verse. I'll just read the Sanskrit too. Naiva tasya kṛtne harto nakṛtneha kaścana na chasya sarva bhuteshu kaścit artha vyapasrayaha. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. So that's verse 18, chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita. So why Krishna wanted the wives of the Brahmanas to go back to their duties and families and help the husbands to complete the sacrifice and help them, you know, raising the families and doing their family duties. What was on his Krishna's mind? What was his plan? So in this class, sort of a longer introduction leading up to this main question, we will talk about why Krishna wants us to perform both our spiritual and material duties concurrently, regardless of whether we are neophyte devotees or advanced devotees. Why? Why does Krishna want us to do that? So we will cover, try to answer those, and this way we understand why Krishna desired the wives of the Brahmanas to go back and keep fulfilling the more external duties of raising their families, helping their husbands. The answers appear to Krishna's recommendation on why we should keep performing our more external duties. The answers appear in chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita, just a little bit farther along the way. The verses are verse 20 through 23, and I'll just read the English to speed it up a little bit. The verse 20 in Bhagavad Gita says, King such as Janaka attained perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. And then another verse. Next verse is, whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. And then Krishna talks about himself, that even the greatest person in the universe, the greatest person in the creation, the creator of the universes, the Supreme Father, Krishna tells Arjuna that for me, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems. Nor am I in want of anything, nor have I a need to obtain anything, and yet I am engaged in prescribed duties. And then Krishna follows, why? Why even I, Krishna, God, why do I have to be engaged in prescribed duties? And Krishna says, for if I ever fail to engaging carefully, performing prescribed duties, O Partha, certainly all men would follow my path. That's the general tendency. If you see someone as great, they do something great, you follow. You try to follow. If they do something that's not so great, he says, you know, they do it, let me try that too. So Krishna continues, if I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. So this concept of responsibility. If you know how to do things right in the material realm, you have people who would like to, or maybe have a chance to learn from you, it's good to teach them. If you don't teach them correctly, you are directly responsible for not teaching them how to do things correctly, especially if you're in a position of an educator, you know, a priest, or someone who has more influence and knowledge. So we base on these four verses and this portion of chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita, we'd like to explain the four reasons why it is good to continue fulfilling our material external duties while doing our spiritual duties. So the first reason is setting good examples and thus motivating people. So they can also lead a fulfilling life, both materially and spiritually. Now, let me give you myself as an example. I go to work every day. You know, even after this class, I have to go to work. On Sunday, before I go to the temple, I still have to go to work. Every day, I go to work. So I have to be there for my clients, and I have to be upbeat and smile. Mm-hmm. I cannot have a bad day because, for one, my job, you know, depends on it and my income, but also I have a, you know, deeper responsibility. Like, you know, if I'm not motivated, I'm not smiling to them, and I'm not excited about my job, what I'm about to teach them, they will not want to come to me, and they will not believe me what I say. If I even say something, I read something from a book, or I tell them what there's some studies that you should do the exercises. You know, I teach fitness and then self-defense and then nutrition. So if I tell them, but I'm not smiling, and my head is down, and I'm really, really down, and you know. They will notice that. They'll pick up on that, and they will know that I have some problems. And I'm telling them about how to live, you know, properly, nicely, you know, exercise, eat right, do some meditation. And here I am, you know, not looking really good, bad day. I'm not very smiling. So imagine, I'll talk to them about nutrition, how they should have a healthy diet so they can think better and function better. And then while I'm talking to them, I have some M&Ms, and then I'm snacking on them, you know, because, I just need some sugar, some boost. So they will pick up on it. You know, they will not be motivated by my example, and my teaching will not be effective. They will go somewhere else, or they will lose faith, and they will not want to talk to any fitness coaches anymore. So they can either go to someone else, I lose my income, or they, you know, not only that, but they will also lose their faith, and they will completely start, you know, commit to their sinful, impure lifestyle, unclean, whatever they're doing, smoking, drinking, and, you know, working too much, and whatever. So, So this is very important to let people know by what you're doing that by doing whatever you're doing, which is, let's say, eating vegetarian food, and you're doing some meditation, and you're maintaining your family, you know, whether you have family or not, you know, you're having good relationship at work, and that you can be in a good spot physically and emotionally. If whatever you're teaching them, they see that you're not in a good spot emotionally or physically, they may not be willing to take your instructions. They will not be inspired. If you are happy and smiling, and if you are teaching them the right knowledge, but you're also supported by your attitude, they will most likely follow. They will say, you know, he's getting some good results. You know, he's healthy. He seems to be happy. You know, so let me listen to this person, whatever he has to say. Let me try to change my diet. Let me try to improve my lifestyle. So this is the first reason why you should continue doing our duties. You know, keep your job, whatever you're doing, whether you're a car mechanic or a business person or an educator. Keep those occupations and do them right. Do them as an offering to Krishna. And you may not necessarily tell everyone, oh, I'm doing it for God. You may not necessarily tell them. You just do them nicely. Be a gentleman when you perform your daily duties. So that's the first reason. Good example and motivating people by how you do your own, how you fulfill your own responsibilities of job, career. And then, obviously, education follows, right? People are inspired by you. They like to follow your instructions, and you're educating them. So, in other words, you become gurus in your departments. You may not necessarily become a spiritual guru if you do not prefer. In the open, but you know, always a little bit of preaching is good for our own spiritual development, but you may be gurus in your own profession. You may be, you know, a good businessman. You can be a teacher or a guru, so you can teach people how to make money the right way. You know, no cheating, no pushing people. Just make, you know, make good money. You can be a guru in how to become a good teacher. You know, you can be a good teacher and teach people. You know, how to nicely convey knowledge. Whatever you're doing, you can be a good teacher. If you're head of your family, you know, you can be a good leader, you know, for how you treat your children and your wife, how you follow your own rules that you set up at home, you know, getting up at 7 a.m. or getting up at 5 a.m., going to work, making food for the children, you know, whatever rules you follow at home, make sure you follow them too. So educating those people, whoever is your people who depend on you. So another thing that I'd like to mention is that our Varnashrama system that we have in the Vedic system, that our Krishna consciousness movement would like to implement more and more. Srila Prabhupada's wish was to implement the Varnashrama system long term. So if you fulfill your responsibilities in a nice way, you keep performing and serving the society nicely on the external, or in the external realm, that means that you will, you know, you're happy about what you're doing, that something is working, so you'll be properly set in your occupation. So that's another discussion yet, which occupation is good for you individually, but we won't cover that. But if people are good examples, they know why they're doing some job, and they like to help people, motivate them, they will be set properly in our society, and our society will be happy. The spiritual and material orders of life, you know, there are four spiritual orders of life, and four material orders of life, Varnashrama, occupational orders. So this is the education. And another important thing is, it's connected to the example of education, is that it does not matter if you're what's spot you're in. If you're doing this kind of job or that kind of job, you can always do it as an offering to the Lord, and in this way you'll be elevated from your position. You may not be happy because you're performing your occupation or your job for the wrong reason. You think you want to get quick money or fulfill your desires, and you may not be happy. But if you start offering those activities, or at least the results of your activities, and then the activity itself to the Lord as an offering, which is technically called karma yoga, then you will become gradually purified. Sometimes when you are in the position of educating people in different departments of knowledge, you might need to break it down for them, so they are not, they don't feel inferior, they don't feel like they cannot grasp it or be able to learn from you. So you might need to actually not only do what you want them to perform or be able to do, but also break it down for them into chunks. I'm sure in our Krishna consciousness movement there are so many teachers, and they know how to make the concept easy for the children, break it down for them. In my particular job, where I teach persons how to exercise, I may break it down for them similarly. Let me give you an example. Like a typical exercise is a push-up, You're on your feet and in a horizontal position, and you're bending your arms. So that's a push-up, bending the arms to 90 degrees. And you cannot touch the knees to the floor. You're just bending the arms, so you're supporting your body weight just on your arms, basically. Now, I ask them to do 15 repetitions, right? 15 bends. But they cannot do even one. So what do I do? I'd say, oh, you know what, you're not so fit, you're not qualified to do this program. Why don't you just go to a different gym or just do something else? I'm sorry, you cannot even do one push-up. What's wrong? So this way, I will not be a very motivating teacher. They may feel down, like, oh, they're not qualified and they're inferior and it's not for them. So I could break it down for them. I will let them do those push-ups on the knees. This way, the leverage changes, and they don't have to work quite as hard, and they only maybe lift, 50% of their body weight instead of 80%. So they can use the knees. There'll be two attachment points, the knees on the floor, and then two hands on the floor. And this way, even someone who is like a very beginner, the beginning stages of exercise or fitness, they will be able to do 15 push-ups and they'll feel good about it. And I says, good job, You did great, You can maybe work on this, three times a week, do those push-ups, and then in a month, you might be able to do one nice regular push-up. And that would be our goal for the month. So in this way, you can motivate people by not only showing them what the ideal exercise is, or most advanced, but show them how you break it up into easier chunks that they can handle, and they feel like they are successful every time they see you, every time they exercise. So that's a good approach. Educating people. Another nice example that I can give that just came to my mind, because I also teach kickboxing and some martial arts, is that sometimes even masters, I was reading about different types of elevated masters who can break 10 boards, and they can sit without moving for a month, or go to the forest and punch the trees and kick the trees and for 18 months and live on fruits and not eating anything solid. There are some different martial arts masters that do that. So when they teach, they they actually have to execute those techniques, you know, the punches and kicks. They have to do 100 of them. And with the students, you know, they don't need it for themselves because they have already mastered the techniques. They know how to defend themselves, or whatever the goal is. But for the sake of the students, for the sake of educating them, they not only should talk and explain the techniques, but also and they should show them and do it with them. The masters actually do the techniques, the beginning techniques, the very beginning techniques of punching. They perform the techniques with the students, so they are exactly seeing how the master is doing it. He's not only talking, but also executing 100 techniques or 1,000 techniques, whatever the case may be. So example and educating the people by actually doing the job with them, along with them. It's very important. Another reason why it is good to maintain, keep performing your prescribed duties or your external duties and your material duties is that we're going to protect the society from going astray. Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita that people will follow. If you're not doing your job or you're doing your job improperly, you're not happy, you're just going because you're doing it because you want to get compensated, you don't like the job, you don't care about the results, as long as you fulfill the quota or whatever the boss told you, the minimum, you don't care exactly who benefits from your work, then you're not properly situated, and this society, if members of the society are work like that, the society will be, Prabhupada uses the phrase, topsy-turvy, you know. Those who are supposed to be teachers will be, you know, they'll be performing other jobs, like they'll be carpenters, you know, and those who are supposed to be carpenters will be, you know, educating people. Or, you know, those who are supposed to be businessmen will be trying to teach they'll be teachers, you know, but they're supposed to be in business. So, because they will be aligning their jobs with how much salary, you know, how much money they can make. So, that's the main motivation. So, if this keeps going, the society will fail to function efficiently and happily. And just look at the world today, how we have so many problems, you know, so many problems. Employees have problems, the bosses have problems, companies fail. A lot of problems at work here, there, you know, people getting fired. A lot of going on in our society. People having mental issues. They're not happy with their lives, with their jobs. So because they're not properly situated, they're not giving the right example to follow. They're not being educated properly about why we should work and how we should work. And another thing that Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita is that we cannot really stop work. Even if we wanted to not do our duties and just be lazy at home, you know, just stay home and watch TV or, you know, play video games, whatever lazy time means for you. Even if you don't want to perform those duties, you still have to do some work. Because by nature, by virtue of being here in this material world, you have to, even when you blink your eyes, you know, when you breathe, when you take a bath, you know, use the bathroom, put the clothes on, you're doing work. So there's no question of completely not working. You cannot stop working because you have a material body. So might as well do the work the right way. And what is the right way? Do them for the Supreme Lord. Do it right. Do it for the right reason. And then gradually, and the result of doing that is described in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 31. I'll just read the English to speed it up a little bit. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully, without envy, become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. So that's another discussion, how we should perform our duties and which occupation is good for us. But suffice it to say that when you do those activities that you sometimes want to stop, like having, you know, your job, or, you know, having a family, or you're pursuing your career, you will still have to work somehow, just working for your own desire, you know, whether you pursue some big opportunity or just stay at home and accept some low-paid job and play video games at home, you still have to work. So might as well do it right for the Supreme Lord, and what happens, you're going to get purified. You know, that's what keeps us here in this material atmosphere, is our desire to enjoy and do things for our own sake. If you change the perspective and you start to use some of the results, or all of the results, or even the work itself offering to the Lord, you'll be gradually purified, and Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you'll be free from bondage of fruitive actions, free from karma, technically, free from karma. You'll be working on that spiritual platform, and you'll be happy. You know, that's what's in it for you. What is it? What's in it for me? Well, I really be happy. You know, I won't be thinking so much about my happiness. I'll be trying to help to offer the results to the Lord, and then helping people, secondarily be helping people. But then I'll be happy, even without trying so much. I'll be trying for the Lord, and then trying to help other people, family members, my patients, clients. But then I'll be happy. And bring us to the next point, why you should perform your duties. You should perform your duties because your heart will be purified. Why does it need to be purified? Well, we're here in this material world because we have some emotions like envy and anger, lust and greed. Krishna says elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita that you are born into illusion, bewildered by the dualities of lust and greed and anger, all these emotions. When you're born into this material atmosphere, 99.9% of the population, they have these emotions in there. As they grow, these emotions show, because our hearts are not pure, and we need to offer the results of our work for the Lord, to the Lord, and then we gradually, those emotions will be purified. It's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, verse 11. I'll read the Sanskrit. Kayena manasa buddhya kevalair indriyari api yoginah karma kurvanti sangam tyaktvatma sudhaye. The yogis, abandoning all attachment, act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. So, purification of the heart. So, performing those duties is very important for other people, because we're educating them, we're motivating them, we're helping them out so they can get to the level where we're at. And whether you're a beginner, you'll be getting purified yourself. It doesn't matter if you're a very advanced spiritualist or not so advanced. Most of us need purification at certain levels. It's good for us. Our service to the Lord will be even sweeter. And then, even if you don't need purification, if your ego tells you you don't need any purification, well, at least help out other people, right? You got a big ego, you're a great Mahatma. Okay, why don't you just still do it just for the sake of those who are not so fortunate as you are? You know, so keep doing your duties. So these are the four reasons why we should perform our external material duties. Like, you know, after this lecture, I'm I just go back to work, you know. And honestly, I'm not ready to give it up anyway. I remember when I joined Krishna Consciousness, my Guru Maharaj told me to just, I told him, I cannot give up my exercise and my karate. There's no way. And my parents want me to be in school. I cannot, because I was reading in the books that you should give everything up and just surrender to the Lord and just stay at the temple. So my Guru Maharaj helped me that, no, you just add, keep doing what you're doing, just, you know, purify your diet a little bit and start add the Hare Krishna. Add chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra to whatever you're doing. And that worked for me because I was happy both materially and spiritually. I was able to continue my education and practice my karate, whatever sports I was doing, and then I was able to associate with devotees and chant. And over time, I gained a slightly different perspective on those material external duties. And maybe I can perform them a little bit better than, you know, 20 years ago. But the bottom line is you want to motivate others so they can do their duties, not just give up and go for the money, you know, whatever is good for their pocket or whatever satisfies them immediately they start to do, but and they may not be set correctly in their occupation. So whatever you're teaching, whether you're a teacher, a businessman, you continue doing that. Give them a good example. Motivate the people and educate them properly. Break down the knowledge so they will accept it at their level, you know. Level 101, in college they have 101 level, then 200 level, 300 level. So break it down for them. And then gradually the society will be set right and people will be happy in our society and everyone will be getting gradually purified, you know, including, you know, the educators who may be a little bit more advanced than the most of the society, but they'll still be getting purified, you know. There are so many different levels of spiritual advancement. Thank you for your attention, and I hope it was somewhat useful, this seminar. If you have any question, I'll be happy to try to answer. Thank you.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Nice realizations. Thank you, Prabhu.
Thank you.
And Prabhupada says, actually, he encourages us in the first canto, chapter 4, verse 1, he encouraged us to have personal realization. Your realization is usually connected to your exercise or martial arts. And I think that would be very relevant for everyone because it's easy to understand, but especially for people who love that field. So that's why I appreciate Prabhupada encourages our personal realization. It's not just quoting a chart, is like a parrot, he basically says in his verse from the first canto, chapter 4, verse 1. You were basically describing this, the difference between material duties, and we shouldn't neglect our material duties. And we see in this pastime, the wives of the brahmanas, they were more concerned about their spiritual duties than their material duties. In the material world, it's usually the kind of opposite for us. And I appreciate your answer. I'm just paraphrasing what you said. Our spiritual duties, our material duties are dependent on our spiritual duties, just like the body, the material body is dependent on the soul. So we see that people say, I have no time for Krishna consciousness or anything spiritual, only have time for a work. But what happens? You're in prison or you ruin your relationship. So what is the use of your material duties? So anyway, there was a point I wanted to share with you that I shared yesterday, and I kind of like to connect it to the class today. Regarding this point, one observation I share with devotees for the last maybe week or so is that we see in the scriptures there are two kinds of interactions, elevating and escalating. Elevating interactions means we raise our consciousness and lower our voice. Escalating means we raise our voice and lower our consciousness. However, there's a deception. There's rules and there's always exceptions to the rule. Putana, She was so beautiful. She lowered her voice and she lowered her consciousness. She wanted to kill Krishna.
I see.
And Vitthasura, there's a verse from the Bhagavatam that glorifies Vitthasura. This is from the 6th canto, chapter 14, verse 1. It says, Rajastama swabhavasya brahma vitrasya patmanaha narayane bhagavati katama sidridamati. It says, Parishit glorifies... Oh, somebody must have locked the door. Anyway, sorry about that. It was open. Anyway... Parashar Maharaj, he glorifies Vitthasura. He says, Vitthasura, how is it possible that somebody in the modes of Rajas and Tamas, in Rajas and Tamas, passion and ignorance, you're screaming at the top of your lungs? He has the body of a demon. He's always shouting. But how is it possible that he has such love? Narayane Bhagavati, how is it possible that he has such love for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And this, I'm connecting this to, we may lower our we may raise our voice, but we also raise our consciousness. And Vitthasura is a perfect example of this. So my question, before I go further, can you, this is kind of related to my point, but can you read to me the first sentence of the purport? What is it? Can you read that again? I missed the opening. This is from what I read yesterday. Can you read the first sentence of this purport of today's class? What does the purport say? I kind of remember when I reviewed the verse yesterday, but I just want to make sure.
The purport to verse 30?
Yeah. What is...
Basically quoted from Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's...
Yeah. What does the first sentence say? Or
from their very youth, the Brahmana's wives had heard about Lord Krishna's beauty, quality, and sweetness... from the village women and also from the flower ladies. Consequently, they always felt ecstatic love for Krishna and were indifferent to their household duties.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make sure to verify my point where I'm going with this. The reason I appreciate that purport is because the wives of the Brahmanas, they distinguish between Krishna's beauty and Krishna's qualities. His beauty doesn't equal his qualities. In the material world, we say beauty equals qualities. Oh, Putana, she's so beautiful. She must have good qualities. And so we see that there's an elaborate story I'll share, but I'm not going to share it now. But basically the analogy is that one boy, he was attracted to, he was very ungrateful. And basically the mother tried to tell him the difference between a gift wrapping and a gift. We're all attracted, just as a person is initially attracted to a gift wrap, a gift package, but repelled by it when he finds out there's nothing inside. So we're also naturally attracted to the gift wrapping of beauty, fame, riches, and high education, but repelled by people when we find out there's nothing inside. So the gift is the good qualities the gopis were mentioning. So my question is that this is the purpose of life, not just to be attracted to the gifts of our material duties, beauty, fame, riches, high education. These are our material duties. But we see that without the gift, the good qualities, then none of our relationships don't last. So my question is, what do you say to somebody? Prabhupada has a very nice answer to this question, but I'd like you to expand on it. What do you say to somebody who says, I have no time? Even devotees, you know, we also say the same thing. I have no time to do as much spiritual duties as I want, or very little time. I only, you know, only have really pretty much time for most of my material duties and a little Krishna consciousness. Here, what do you say to somebody who says, I have no time for my spiritual duties?
Well, it's a very good question. You know, it depends on who they are. If they come to my work and tell me that, you know, I have time for exercise, but I don't have time for meditation. So I can tell them, if they understand the value of the meditation, or, you know, that could mean chanting Hare Krishna, you know, not necessarily, but for us it does. For someone who is an outsider and maybe just starting on some kind of, you know, Om mantra or... So if they understand the value of spiritual life, I will give them a challenge. You write out on a piece of paper from the time you get up to the time you go to bed what you do, exactly what you do. And I will guarantee you that I will find time by switching things up for you. I will guarantee you I will find time for you. If you accept this challenge, I will give you a plan that you can follow, that you will have 1 hour a day devoted to your prayer or meditation, you know, I give them a challenge. If they come to me as a client who wants improved quality of their life, however, they want only, okay, I just want the exercise part, but, you know, so it depends on who they are. If they are a different personality, I may not give them this challenge. I'll say, okay, sounds like right now at this point you have different priorities or, you know, things are tough, so I'll, you know, I'll get back to you, you know, come back to me at a different time, maybe you'll be ready. So it depends on who they are, how their energy is, you know. It's individual, I think.
Thank you. Can I share Prabhupada's answer with you? This is from the, like I said, expand the realization. Everyone has their personal realizations, and sure. Thank you for the answer. This whole topic reminded me of what Prabhupada said in the first canto, chapter 13, verse 15. And I was looking up before class to make sure I had the verse right. So you could read this. Everyone could read the purport. But before I share this, one thing I'm suggesting you could share with others that there's two kinds of workouts. Workout on the outside and workout on the inside.
Sure.
What's the purpose of a workout? To remain strong. But if you don't work out on the inside, then you're going to go to prison. You're going to ruin your relationship.
Sure.
So that's why we read the Bhagavatam, internal workout. So,
yes.
But Prabhupada says, he very answers, if anyone says, I have no time for Krishna consciousness. So this is from the first canto, chapter 13, verse 15. Prabhupada tells a narration of Yamaraj. Long story short, he says, it is the duty of the Mahajan. Yamaraj is a Mahajan. And he says it's the duty of a Mahajan to speak Krishna Katha and hear Krishna Katha. Just like it's our duty to feed ourselves food or a workout, you could say. Otherwise, we'll become spiritually dead. So he says, among all the demigods and Mahajans, this is precisely what Prabhupada says. I'm paraphrasing. You can read it yourself. He says, Yamaraj, among all the demigods and Mahajan, he has the least amount of time of everyone within the universe. Why? Because he's always punishing someone, and there are more criminals than there are good people. So he has the least amount of time. However, Yamaraj realized, this job is boring because I have no time to feed myself with Krishna consciousness. If you don't feed yourself food, you're going to be weak. So Yamaraj thought, I have no time to feed myself Krishna consciousness. So I'm remaining spiritually. So you know what he says? Yamaraj says, Prabhupada says, Yamaraj asked Krishna, can you give me more time to hear Krishna Katha and speak Krishna Katha? So it's a long narration where one sage was punished by some dacoits. Long story, some dacoits went into the hermitage of a sage. They were running from the constables, the police. The police went into the hermitage, arrested everyone, including the sage. The sage name was Manduka Muni. So they were about to kill all of the dacoits, and they assumed Manduka Muni was a dacoit. They were about to pierce them with the spears. So the king of this province, he knew the sage, and he chastised his constable. He said, he apologized to the sage, please forgive me for my constables. But Manduka Muni, he knew that nothing can happen without the sanction of Yamaraj. So he went to the planet of Yamaraj. And he says, hey, Yamaraj, why was I going to be punished in such a heinous way? So Yamaraj says, when you were a child, you took an ant, and you were going to pierce this ant with a pin, and therefore you're going to receive your karma. So he chastised Yamaraj. He says, I was only an ignorant child. How can you punish me like that? Because it's described that people like Yamaraj, they're free from any defects. Otherwise, how can you punish somebody? But it's described in this pastime that Yamaraj did make a mistake. And because of this mistake, Lord Krishna used Manduka Muni to punish Yamaraj. His punishment was he will be born on earth as a great saint, renounced saint named Vidura. And because he was Vidura, he got the opportunity to hear Krishna Katha and speak Krishna Katha for 100 years. And when he came back to his duty, he was so happy. Just like if you go to a vacation, you go to a vacation, you come back, you could tolerate your miserable job.
Sure.
Even more, you're always meditating on it. So this is what I appreciate about this pastime. All you have to do is ask Krishna, Krishna, I want more time. Can you give me more time? He's the creator of the universe, the controller of the universe. He can map out more time while we're still, you know, don't have to worry about our finances. So what are some, if I ask a question, one little question you could spend again, what are some steps we could take to even develop the desire to ask Krishna, can you give me more time for Krishna Katha? What is the impetus where we could even come to that point of asking Krishna, can you give me more time?
Well, very good. I really like those stories and examples. Really nice. I'm afraid we don't have that much time. I can just really tell you that if you don't have the desire to ask Krishna for that, that ask Krishna about something. You know, if you cannot ask Krishna about, Krishna, please give me more time so I can chant more. You can ask him, can you please give me the feeling that I can pray for it? You know, I can pray for being able to ask you this, to give me more time for chanting, or, you know. So that's the next step down, but you're still saying, okay, I cannot do it now. I cannot ask you sincerely, but I can ask you about being, I want to be more sincere and honest, and eventually I want to ask you this question. Give me more time for chanting. I don't want to do other things, just chant. So, thank you, Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.